This episode of WDW Today is being sponsored by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. And when you're saying to your family, you know, it's time to plan our next Walt Disney World vacation. Let's make it happen. Let's go back down to our favorite place. Well, you know, you're going to want to start looking at prices and hotels and all the tickets. And there's a lot that goes into planning a Disney World vacation. But the way to make it easy on yourself is MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. That's right. Their agents are here to help you plan that perfect trip, get you a great price, and make it all easy on you. Because after all, you don't have to spend a lot of time planning out the details. No. Let MEI and Mouse Fan Travel help you plan that perfect vacation. They're here to help. In fact, check them out right now at mousefantravel.com.
Bringing the world to your world, this is Walt Disney World Today. Here are Mike Scopa, Len Testa, Mike Newell, and your host, Matt Hochberg.
It's Wednesday, October 22nd, 2014, and this is episode 1412 of WDW Today. I'm Matt Hochberg of StudiosCentral.com and RoyalCaribbeanBlog.com. Joining me on today's show is Len Testa, co-author of The Unofficial Guide to Walt Disney World, and he's also the host of the Disney Dish with Jim Hill podcast. Welcome to the show, Len.
How's it going, Matt?
Outstanding. Speaking of Jim Hill, Len, you're going up to New York this weekend to do a little presentation with Jim live in New York.
That's right. Sunday, we're doing a show in the 1964-1965 World's Fair in Flushing Meadows. So we're going to be at the site of the old World's Fair with our own Mr. Mike Newell. We're going to talk about the history of the Disney Company's involvement in the fair and the legacy of that fair. I think it's going to be pretty interesting.
Seeing that it's Wednesday today, is it too late to get tickets?
Tickets. Unfortunately, tickets, we sold out of the last ticket on Sunday.
Rats. Well, there you go, people. All you people that waited until Wednesday before, you'll have to. Is it going to be recorded?
Yeah, I think Mike's going to record it, yeah.
Cool. Also joining us on today's show, Mike Scopa, a blogger for touringplans.com, and he is the co-host of the Mickey Mouse podcast. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Aeschylus, Sophocles, Euripides.
What?
Spaceship Earth?
Yes. Wow. The original. Vic Perrin, the original. Very good, Leonard. Very good.
Thank you.
Also joining us on today's show, Mike Newell of Mouse World Radio. Comes from Mike.
Pronounce that first name.
I wasn't even going to go close to pronouncing that.
And also joining us on today's show, the fabulous Annette Owens, a manager at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. Welcome to the show, Annette.
Hey, nice to be here. October's about gone. It's crazy.
Almost. Hey, speaking of that, Annette, thank you for reminding me. Our next live show is actually this Sunday, October 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Let's talk Disney live. It'll be a lot of fun to be able to do that. So, of course, our live shows, we have one monthly, usually the last Sunday of the month, and it's still true this month. October 26th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, so please join us for that. More details at WDWtoday.com. And on today's show, we're going to start off with some email, shall we? Let's start with an email from Jacqueline from Portland, Maine. I recently learned that Disney offers a dolphin in-depth experience at Epcot. My daughter is 10 years old, and I've been considering Dolphin Encounter for her. She would absolutely love it. We go to Disney every 2 to 3 years, and I'm considering incorporating this experience into our trip. Do you have any insights on the specific dolphins experience? Is the dolphins in depth? Is that the that's not the swimming one like with the scuba, is it?
Yeah, we've actually got a okay. So there's an actual blog post on it on Touring Plans dating back to 2013. You're not going to find a whole lot of information on it because you're not allowed to take many photos of the backstage areas. Mm. But Aaron Foster did one. Yeah, you get a lot of hands-on experience with the.
Oh, yeah, it's a diving experience
with the dolphins.
$199 yeah. per adult. So I'm assuming this is teens and adult, but same price. So $199, and you get to an enlightening and truly intimate dolphin experience, limited to a group of no more than 8 guests per day.
Yeah, you have to be 13 years old, Monday yep. through Friday, 9:45 a.m.
You interact. You interact with dolphins in waist deep water for about 30 minutes. You see firsthand yeah. how they care for the dolphins. You view backstage areas and learn how the dolphins are trained. You sit in on a training and research session, and you participate in conversation about global issues affecting ocean life.
Oh, this yeah. isn't the Miami Dolphins.
The Miami Dolphins in depth. It's a different thing. So we're talking about Dolphins and Rosie's all cranky now. The 30 minutes though. I mean, it's 30. It's like around $200 right, and it's 30 minutes, which seems steep.
Actually, sorry, Len. And Disney World's website says 3 hour experience.
It's 30 minutes actually with the dolphin though.
Oh yeah, you're right. Sorry, 30 minutes. Right, it's for interacting. That's right.
Right, right. The thing is, like, and I've done this, you know, on cruise ships. On cruise ships, you might get like you're in groups of like 10 or 12, but you might get 5 minutes with the dolphin or 6 minutes with the dolphin. So this is much more interaction with the animal itself. So
cool.
But the original question was a 10-year-old girl, so she's gonna have to wait a couple of years.
Yeah.
All right. And the other thing is, by the way, about the tour, you do not need to swim or be scuba certified to participate.
No. So
please bring a bathing suit if you wish to enter the water.
And it would help if you smelled like herring.
Also, Jackal wants to know, with the escalating controversy about dolphins and whales in captivity, a.k.a. SeaWorld, Blackfish, etc., do you think the dolphins will stay in Epcot?
Yes.
Any particular reason?
Because what Disney does and what SeaWorld does. So Disney doesn't really train their dolphins to do things where SeaWorld does. And it's the training that takes that people complain about.
That's true.
The incentives to do the
they've said
the performances.
I've seen the shows in the Seas Pavilion where they have like a couple times a day they'll have this thing where you go and a lot of the trainers are in there with colors and numbers and stuff for mm-hmm. the dolphins. But they say first of all, they say we don't, you know, starve the dolphins. If they don't want to participate, they're not going to participate. The dolphins, that is.
Yeah.
So it's very much a, you know, if they're interested, they'll play. Otherwise, they won't. So lends more to what you're saying.
Yeah, cool.
Next, we have an email from Ezra James Sharkington III from Mariana Trench, Atlantic Ocean.
Sounds like royalty.
Your Majesty.
Wow. From the ocean?
This got here from a bottle.
Yeah.
It's good to be the king.
With all the work on the east side of the Polynesian, very little being done on the west side. West side.
West side.
Well, actually, no work being done on the west side. What are your thoughts about the west side? Do you think that they'll be updating it as well in the future? Or you think the west side will remain as it is today? The west side that we all know and love. I should point out that I really just wrote this question so the Matt has a chance to say, West Side. He says, West Side.
You know, you guys are running that joke to the ground.
Are they? Is there any actual
work? What was the question again?
What's the question? The question is there going to be any work being done on Downtown Disney on the West Side?
Yeah, I don't think they're doing anything over on the West Side by Grand Floridian.
Next, we have an email from Sean from Winter Springs, Florida. We're at Magic Kingdom this weekend, and we walked over to the area of the Haunted Mansion queue where Madame Leota's ring was embedded in the concrete. It's located in the new queue near the Spitting Sailor Tomb. Well, much to our dismay, it was gone. There was only a crater in the concrete where the ring used to lie. I asked a cast member where it was. The cast member told us it was out for polishing. Do you have any news on this? Huh. Was it removed by Disney World, or did a guest manage to take it?
I don't know.
No clue. actually,
sounds like things we saw on the Magic and or the Wonder and the Fantasy and when they just came out, people were just taking anything that wasn't attached. But
really?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yes.
I would recommend if you want to get more information, perhaps about this, if you're really passionate about it, there's a great website called DoomBuggies.com, and it's a website dedicated just to the Haunted Mansion, and they have a great message board over there, and I would totally recommend.
Or you could look on eBay.
Yeah. one ring in solid concrete. Next, we have an email from Jeffrey Spicer. Greetings, everyone. My wife and I just spent a great weekend celebrating our anniversary at the Animal Kingdom Lodge. We splurged and saved concierge for the first time and could not have been happier with the experience. At the nighttime snack dessert service, we were talking to one of the cast members who told us they were working on some new drinks for their guests, but could not serve them yet because they were not sanctioned by their leaders. After some coaxing, we got him to tell us that it was what it was and to bring in the ingredients so we can mix it ourselves. He agreed and told us what they were, thinking of calling it the Wild Africa Sangria. He brought out a glass of mosaic red wine and jungle juice and told us to mix the two. It was great.
Really?
After we told him of what we thought about the drink, he said that they were also thinking of keeping the drink as a secret menu item that only guests who were in the know could order. So if you ever sang it, Concierge Animal Kingdom asks for Wild Africa Sangria. We highly recommend it. What are other types of secret menu items you would like to see around Disney? I know one that Newell and Annette are big fans of.
Can you imagine like the In-N-Out burger menu at Pecos Bill?
That'd be pretty funny, actually. But Newell, your BBC you always order.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
That chocolate BBC.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
That's a special item, right?
Yes, we found that on the cruise line, and they were able to make it. You just have to tell them what's in it, and they'll make it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty accommodating. If they've got the liquor, you know, why not?
You just got to make sure they have a blender. You go to the wrong bar, you're just not going to get it.
Right. And most bars do have a blender.
Yeah. How do they know how much to charge?
Well, that's just it, you know.
Don't worry.
It's a Disney price.
Disney. Are you worried about that?
$34.95. Thank you.
Next, we have an email from Patty from Columbus, Ohio. My husband and I are looking forward to our upcoming 5-day trip in November with our teenage boys. Being boys and teenagers, I'm not certain that they will get all that excited about taking advantage of tons of photo pass opportunities. My question is, if we choose not to take advantage of Memory Maker, how will our experience differ? Will we still be able to review pictures online or through an app as they were taken? Will they still be linked to on our Magic Bands? I realize that we would have to purchase them a la carte at a significantly higher price, but we may only be interested in a handful.
Yeah, you'll be as long as you're handing out a Magic Band every time the photo is being taken, or you're wearing the Magic Band on ride photos. You can skim through them before you buy anything. It'll be more expensive if you buy stuff,
right?
Yeah,
it's just like it's basically old photo pass is what that is. You're just you can still link the tickets. They'll be on your wristband, like on the Magic Band. It's all part of your account. You do the same thing. The only difference is instead of getting them all, you have to cherry pick them, and you can do whatever you want. You can edit them. You can, choose none of them. It's perfectly fine.
Definitely. I have to say, with teenagers, the most fun I've had is going, okay, most creative selfie of the day, go.
You also have girls. These are boys.
Well, yeah, but boys do it too. Trust me. I've seen them.
Boys do selfies?
Yeah.
I do selfies all the time.
Man, what's this world come to? Let's go to our next email, and it is from Bradley Hughes. Thank you for enabling my Disney obsession 3 times a week. My question is about going cheap at Disney for our next trip. We usually stay at a moderate or value resort, but this time, at least 2 of the people going in our family are buying premium annual passes. That being said, we're thinking about staying at the Fort Wilderness for 6 nights in a tent.
Sweet.
The difference in staying at the All-Star Music Blah is about $300. We're going in November, so I'm not too worried about the weather as much. I'm also planning on taking a portable AC unit. My question is it worth it to stay at the campsites even though we're not big campers? Or is it better to splurge and have a cool room to come back at night?
Well, when are they going? What time of year?
November.
Hmm.
I'm going to answer this for you right now. The answer is splurge for a hotel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, yes.
If you are not campers, sleeping on the ground is awful. I'm going to tell you this right now. It's not fun.
Walking down to the comfort station.
Yeah. You don't sleep well. It's the weather. Even if the weather's perfect, it's not fun.
Noel may have a different experience, seeing as he was in an RV.
Yeah. Now an RV is different because you're sleeping in a bed in a four place with four walls and a roof.
Not smelling the bacon cooking 2 doors down.
God, that was .
You didn't have to bring home the bacon.
Wow, I can still smell the bacon in my head. I can still smell the bacon.
Nothing beats. We're all camping there. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you may have heard we did a live event called Tent Fest, and where we all camped at Fort Wilderness. And among those camping were Fred Hazelton and a former employee of Touring Plans that no longer works there. And they were camping together, and it's a terrible experience. We all hate it. People that were in the tents hated it. And we get to about, it's like, what? And at what time was it? Like 3-4 o'clock in the morning?
Yes.
Yeah. All of a sudden we just hear.
We hear an engine start.
The engine start. Just put it in, and they all left. I'm like, where are they going? Turns out at like 4 o'clock, they couldn't take it anymore. They went over they had a reservation that next day or that day, depending on your perspective.
Yeah, they did.
At Port Orleans. Yeah, but and they went there and said, look, we have got an appointment for later today. Is our hotel room ready yet? And actually let them stay.
They did let them stay.
But it was such a bad experience that they just couldn't take it anymore. So
Matt left me in the cold at the campsite. You just like packed up and left.
Classic. I don't know what your problem was. It was nice and toasty in my campsite.
Yeah, you were not answering the door.
You're just more of an outdoorsy kind of guy, Mike.
I know.
Question for Scopa here. Secondly, is the Tables and Wonderland card worth the price tag? If I have an annual pass, is the extra 20% worth paying for? We only dine on site while at the World. So I'm thinking this is a good buy and just need some advice from the experts. Thanks again for the content you guys put out.
I think we addressed this the other day, and Len wasn't there, so I'd like Len's input on this. But what we said, Len, was that if you can justify the cost of an annual pass, thinking that you would visit Walt Disney World within that 12-month period that would justify the cost of an annual pass, then most likely you could probably justify the cost of tables in Wonderland, especially if you liked to eat at some several of the of the sit-down restaurants, and even if you don't, I mean, you can use it all over the place. So we pretty much said that if you can justify the cost of an annual pass, you probably can justify the cost of a Tables in Wonderland. And I'll tell you, if you use it, you know, for a 7-day period, it may even pay for itself in that 7-day period.
Cool.
I agree. There's if you're going to be down there for 13, 14 days.
Yeah,
if you spend $600 on sit-down dining over the 13 days, what's that, less than $50 a day?
Yeah.
You're set.
Even liquor, you know? $600 on liquor.
Right?
Who's making
that
tea?
You'll need if you stay at the campground.
Whew. Yeah. Drink liquor to keep you warm. What is that noise?
Yeah, what is that noise? Who's on Space Mountain?
Yeah.
Sounds like someone's making tea.
Yeah, what was that?
I don't know.
Must be.
Hear it. So is it me?
No, it's gone now. Anyway, next we have an email from.
I thought I was hearing things.
Next we have an email from Aziz Parker from New Orleans, aka the Polynesian parking guy.
Oh, that guy.
I'm emailing to answer a listener question for episode 1373. The listener asked about Magic Bands for annual passes after upgrading undercover tourist tickets. I recently did the same thing. First, they should connect that ticket to their Disney Experience account so that they can get a Magic Band for the trip. Secondly, when the ticket is upgraded, a Magic Band will not be issued at that moment, but the annual pass will be attached to the Magic Band that they already have. They can customize a specific annual pass Magic Band through the app or website if they want to, but it's not necessary. Hope that helps.
Yes.
Cool.
Next, we have an email from Jennifer from Birmingham, Alabama. She writes, Matt, read this really fast. It's a long email.
Oh, boy. Right?
I've been listening to your show from the very beginning, and in fact, for about 5 shows in, my husband asked me about 9 p.m. if I wanted to take a short trip to the World. I said yes. We hadn't been there since grad night in 1996. We drove overnight from Birmingham, Alabama, and proceeded to make every mistake one can make while vacationing at Disney. Wow. Many years and many trips later, including large family trips and to many solo trips, our friends and family consider us the experts. We recently were able to take a trip to Disneyland and loved it, and hopefully we'll be going to Tokyo in a couple of years, all thanks to y'all's show.
Yeah.
Okay, enough sucking up. I was thinking about an episode from several years ago where each of you unwrapped a Christmas gift from Disney Santa. I believe it was Annette who wished for an adult-only resort.
Yeah.
This got me thinking. I was born and raised in New Orleans, and I love the Port Orleans French Quarter Resort. It's a perfect replica of is it a perfect replica of the real thing? Not even close. But who really wants to stay at a resort that smells like stale beer and urine? I think that this resort would be a perfect adult-only resort. It's small, so Disney could not be giving up too many rooms, and it's very close to downtown Disney. The only thing that's lacking is the extremely good quality of food that New Orleans is famous for.
Yep,
that's true.
Yep.
Disney, call up the Brennan family and get a decent Creole restaurant built at the French Quarter Resort.
Amen.
Just my 2 cents. Keep up the good work. P.S. The beignets are truly awful and could easily be fixed. The lines would be out the door if they made them right. P.S. I also was thinking about the show where y'all discussed celebrity sightings in Walt Disney World. Attached is my picture of my favorite. And it is a picture of...
Matt.
Joe Rohde. Cool.
That's
a Disney Imagineer.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I have to say, I agree with the beignet thing because I have been to New Orleans and no comparison. Oh, no comparison.
None at all, huh?
Nope. And I know my sweets.
Yeah, well, the whole Port Orleans food situation pretty much stinks.
You remember
thing they'd have to do is change the theming on the pool. Get rid of a little dinosaur slide or
the dragon,
whatever that thing is. The dragon.
Do you remember when they had the restaurant Bon Famille's?
Yeah.
That was decent. I mean, I've never been to New Orleans, so I don't know what true Louisiana food tastes like, but that was pretty good. I liked that place. It was different.
Cool. Next email from Alara from Nashville, Tennessee. Hey Guys and Amazing One.
Who's the
amazing one? Thank you.
Oh,
okay. Our family is planning our second trip using your show and touringplans.com, and we'll be traveling in early October soon. And I have a question for Len. We just got our welcome back. We just got our FastPass Plus or Be Our Guest launch, and when I plug that data into our personalized touring plan and hit optimize, it moves Seven Dwarfs Mine Train out of the first ride of the day to around 6 p.m. The plan also suggested not using our FastPass Plus for Enchanted Tales at 6:30, but suggested getting a FastPass for Seven Dwarfs instead. I fiddled with the plan some more, even taking out some of the reservations for lunch to see if the plan would come back with Seven Dwarfs in the first place, but it never did. It insisted the Mad Tea Party, Barnstormer, and Winnie the Pooh came first. The mantra I've been hearing on the podcast and reading in the guide was been ride Seven Dwarfs first, get FastPass Plus for other rides. We did this, followed the suggested times for Peter Pan and Enchanted Tales with Belle, and then at nighttime, after a dark ride on Big Thunder, just for the fun of it, assuming Seven Dwarfs would show up first on the touring plan. Regardless of the time it does show up, it has a 30-minute wait, and it suggests we use FastPass Plus. Should we exchange Enchanted Tales with Belle FastPass for Seven Dwarfs instead?
If you can get it, yeah.
What do you think about the initial plan about Seven Dwarfs being at 6-ish as opposed to being the first ride of the day?
Yeah, so the thing we've noticed in the last, say, month or two is that the actual wait time increases so rapidly for Seven Dwarfs that really unless you're in the first, 900,000 people that are there, actually less than that, probably if you're going standby, if you're within the first 300 or 400, even then your wait's going to be somewhere around 45 minutes to an hour.
Wow.
And it's hard to say, go there first when you know the likelihood that someone's going to be in the first 300 or 400 is going to be, almost zero. And the reason is so the attraction's capacity is around 1,800 people an hour. Three quarters of that goes to FastPass. So there's about 450 people who can get into Seven Dwarfs in an hour. And of those 450 people, if you're in the first 100, your wait's about 15 minutes. If you're in the second 100, your wait's 30 minutes. If you're in the third 100, your wait's 45 minutes. If you're in the fourth 100, your wait's about an hour, right? There's no way that we can actually tell people to go there first as a touring plan and assume that they're going to be one of the first couple hundred people standby to go in there.
So I have a question for Len, Matt, and Annette because Mike has not ridden the mine train yet. How long would each of you wait? What is the threshold for each of you to wait for that attraction?
I waited. I did the standby line in the morning, and we waited probably about 40 minutes. I'd probably give it about 60. For my daughter, if she wanted to ride it, I'd probably do 60. But for me?
Yeah, for you. Gabriella's not there.
10.
I mean, I'd give it about 30, I would say. If it's 30 or less, I would wait for it.
Annette?
I've ridden it twice, and I went fast pass both times.
Me too, so.
I got to say, if it's more than 20 minutes, I don't know if I'm standing in line. I would want a fast pass.
Yeah, Len?
Yeah, 15, 20. Tops.
Yeah. But yeah, I'd say about 20 for me too. Yep.
Okay. Next, we have an email from Daphne in Ennis, Texas. Howdy. Love your show and appreciate the evidence-based approach to touring plans. We visited the world in summer 2014 for Star Wars Weekends and it was a blast. But we noticed the problem with trying to get extra FastPass Plus reservations once we had used up our original three for the day. At the Magic Kingdom, we made an extra trip to walk to the nearest kiosk in Adventureland just to try and pick up another set of fast passes. However, the line was crazy long. With a posted standby wait time of 25 minutes for our targeted ride, waiting in line for 10 to 15 minutes to get a fast pass just didn't seem to make sense. Has Len's team done any research on the expected wait time per person in line for the kiosk might be? We used it the following day at Epcot, and it did not seem efficient despite a cast member being available for assistance.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think in the guide we said it could be up to 15 minutes. It really depends on where you go and the time of day. The farther out you go from the central hub, I think the less crowded the kiosks are.
It depends on the time of day. Like we would see in the Magic Kingdom, the two kiosks we primarily went to were in Fantasyland and in Tomorrowland. And anytime before noon, you could pretty much walk up there. But after about lunchtime or so, man, those things were like they not only did they have a cast member, they had kiosk there, they had extra cast members there to help. And it moved a little bit, but like mid after like 2-3 o'clock was the worst, because that was just there literally was a queue for the kiosks. But then after like probably around dinner time, it died down quite a bit because obviously there's less fast passes by that point.
But that music again.
Yeah. So if you can use the app, but sometimes I understand that, you know, you need to talk to somebody, especially when things get screwed up. But I mean, Len, do you think there are fast pass kiosks that are less crowded than others?
I think there are, you know, the ones that are farther away from the central hub. So I think there's one over in Frontierland. That's not bad.
Where's the one in Frontierland?
Isn't it over by Big Thunder?
You might be right. I never saw it. So
the I think there are two in Tomorrowland. There's one by Stitch, and then there's one by Buzz. And I think the one by Buzz is slightly less crowded.
Cool.
Yeah.
Next, we have an email from A. Antonio, Cousin Mickey Doesn't Talk About on the Boards. Hello, my fellow deeks. We have stumbled upon an awesome life hack for you guys. We all want a cheap hotel that doesn't involve odd stains and bad smells. I found a way to get killer rates. Either you or a family member need to get a job at the Hampton Inn or Hilton Inn. Any hotel in that group will work. If you are the employee, you can get a rate around $40 a night. If you're a family of the employee, you can get a big discount. For instance, the Downtown Disney Hilton, $129 a night. Waldorf, $171. Bonnet Creek Hilton, $129. You or a family member only need to work part-time to qualify for this benefit.
That's an idea.
But then you got to work at a hotel.
You got to work at a hotel, yeah. Tell
After
my wife.
Working at a hotel, you might not want to stay in a hotel.
So I'm going to get another job to work at a hotel so I can get the $40 rate.
Yeah. It's a little much to go for to save 20 bucks a night, but okay. Last email.
Just make
a
family member do it. That's what he's saying. Make a family member do it.
Make you go nice. And work at a hotel so that I can get a cheap Disney rate.
Can't argue with that logic, Mike. Mm. All right. Last email of the day means I give Mr. Newell 3 emails to choose from. One gets read today. The other two go back in the email queue to be answered later. Ready, Mike?
Surely.
Your options are unhappy camper, just a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Who buys that?
Oh, boy.
Ohana equals not worth it? Question mark.
I'm not going to answer that now because of the construction. Wow. So, yeah. Let's go with number one, unhappy camper.
Just a little bit. My last email today is from Mark. Hey, my question and comment is, do any of you agree that when people talk about their trips, I sense much less enthusiasm or excitement for the rides or dining than just a few years ago? I started listening in 2008 to all the podcasts, following the websites every week for updates and trip reports. Yours is very objective, and I like that you are not just complaining or just pixie dust either. One example is Space Mountain after refurbishment, darkness, new cars. From opening in 1975, the ride was my favorite, and now I cannot ride it anymore. After 3 tries, only terror and anxiety causing a big deal because I could ride Disneyland all day and have fun. Maybe it's just me. Another thing, does anyone like the new queues? While listening, I cannot say this is a comment from a park guest. Not trying to be a downer on our favorite place. Just wondering if this is a common feeling from the listeners or you guys. So I guess there's 2 questions in there. One is, what do we feel about the queues? And the other one is, how do we feel about, are the rides, we have less enthusiasm or excitement about the rides and dining than just a few years ago.
Speaking for me, I've noticed that the older I've gotten, the less tolerant I am to those thrill rides that we're so used to going on. So whereas 20 years ago I could have rode Space Mountain 20 times in a day, now if I ride it more than 3 or 4, I start to feel it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, Mike. When I ride the Expedition Everest, Animal Kingdom, I used to be able to ride that over and over and over again.
Right.
And I rode it twice.
Yeah.
A year or two ago, and I was like, I'm feeling sick. I gotta get off this ride.
And I was done for the day.
I've done 2 rides.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's wrong with me? I'm like, oh yeah, I'm getting old.
Age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. But I mean, I don't think that's necessarily I've been excited for a number of new attractions that have been coming to Disney. They're different. I mean, there's no question they're building different rides, but I think they're getting I think the what's it called? The Ariel's ride. Mermaid ride in the Magic Kingdom. That's obviously very much based on kind of a traditional dark ride. The The new Mine Train, I mean, for kids, I think is cool. It's got, I like that it's not just a roller coaster. It's a little bit of a dark ride in the middle. Sorry, spoiler alert. So I think it depends on the attraction, honestly. And certain things I get more excited for. I was excited for the new Test Track, and I was disappointed with it because it was largely the same Test Track, just with a different, you know, I mean, same ride, same track, just different, you know, stuff to look at.
I don't mind it so much. I like the change that they did. It's not. I don't dislike it. I think it's good.
See, there you go.
I like building a car better than watching a video any day of the week.
I hate the car part.
Well, I just don't like sitting there watching the same video that everybody's just maneuvering around everybody to get to the door to exit.
The same thing with Space Mountain. Any kind of upgrade in the queue is better than what was there, which was nothing. So
yeah, that's true. Before, I was just staring and looking down to see if anybody lost anything underneath the platform that you're walking on.
Right. So,
but now with those type of queues, you realize that the line on that side is going to stop until the game is over, and then there'll be a huge jump forward.
Yeah, that's very much true. It's very annoying, but it's very true. Cool. Well, that'll do it for us today. Don't forget, we want to have your emails as well. Email us questions with an S at www.com, and we will read them eventually. Also, our sponsor for today's episode is MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. And, you know, planning your Disney World trip, maybe even listening to this podcast, you're like, man, I really want to get back down there. All these great attractions that they're talking about, it's got my blood going. I want to book a trip. Well, give our friends at MEI and Mouse Travel a try. They are a great agency that helps you plan your perfect Walt Disney World vacation. They're here to help you, in fact. Check them out right now at mousefantravel.com.
Right now.
And, of course, as I mentioned at the top of the show, our next live show is this Sunday, October 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. More details at WDWJ.com. For a line test on Mike Scopa, Mike Newell, and the fabulous Annette Owens, I'm Matt Hotchberg. We'll see you on the next show.
Stupid Judy, stupid energy.
This has been a production of Mouse World Radio.